What do companies like Yahoo, eBay, Intel, and Google have in common? They were all founded in part by foreign investors. But many U.S. immigration and education policies discourage or even prohibit foreign students from starting new businesses, according to a team of UMKC professors. The Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation just published a paper by Tony Lupino, John Norton, and Malika Simmons, which outlines ways foreign students might be allowed to create new businesses and new jobs in the U.S. Their proposals include changes to university policies and immigration policies, like the HB-1 visa, which allows temporary employment of foreign workers.
Lupino and Norton explained that the project began when Norton was exploring the creation of a master's degree for global entrepreneurs. He says this opened his eyes to just how difficult things are for foreign students looking to start businesses.
We found out that it's pretty difficult for a foreign student on an F-1 visa to launch a company in this country and then stay here and run it. They can do other things. They could finish their studies and be hired by a company that would then sponsor them and take a job, but they couldn't start a company and create jobs. And so we found that kind of puzzling in one sense and unfortunate in another, because we think job creation is a pretty important matter.
So let's talk immigration law, because that's really one of the problems that you point to, is that immigration law really is a barrier for students at universities doing job creation and new venture startups. Do you think that 9/11, for example, had an impact on the immigration law as we see it today in terms of how it impacts entrepreneurship?
Well, it had an impact on all of immigration law, I think, and as we point out in one part of the paper, it used to be that students could come into the country without much of an interview process, and now there are more rigorous standards. So there were definitely changes after 9/11, and they're perfectly understandable. There is also a notion that on the typical student F-1 visa, generally they're issued for education with an intent of returning to your country. And so it does take some change in the law to also respect the possibility that it might make sense for our economy to keep the students starting businesses here longer. And, you know, those are the kinds of issues we were starting to look at in the paper, and that's what our reforms were bred out of.
And I understand one other area that you're concerned about in terms of immigration law is the H-1B visa and the kinds of burdensome paperwork requirements that are required in that area. Can you talk some about that?
Yeah, there have been several commentators in publications and an open letter to the head of the United States Immigration Service that have talked about a process of burdensome document requests, difficult to meet, and some have said that as a regulatory matter, the approach seems to be sort of a presumption that there's not legitimacy in the businesses, and you have to kind of fight against that. And there's been a call to try to streamline that process, make it more reasonable, and still manage fraud possibilities.
Now, there's also in immigration law this whole issue of not allowing immigrants to be self-employed. What was the legal background that led to that kind of policymaking?
Well, the laws kind of changed some. Initially, there were some rulings under the L visas where self-employment was recognized as employment and could be a valid basis for staying on an employment-related visa. The problem is, as the law turned to the H-1B visas, there's more fear that if you own the company yourself, nobody's really controlling. There's no separation between the control of the employee's work and the ownership of the company, and that I think the underlying theme is maybe it's not a true legitimate company to start with, as it might be if there was somebody independent running the business. That's the problem. Now, our view and what really inspired a good part of our reforms is that, first, a lot can be learned for students experientially from the process of starting your own business and being a founder. So you'll see one of our reforms has to do with curricular practical training, which is a regulatory possibility under which students on F-1 visas can currently work off campus for established employers. But the designated school officials across the country, we understand, are reluctant to sign off on you're working for your own company. In fact, it's pretty clear from the commentary we found that that's viewed as not currently allowable. So that's one of the things that we're proposing to change with some standards so that the school would have to assess through somebody, a faculty member trained in entrepreneurship, that there's some legitimate potential for the business, and hopefully get that recognized as allowable curricular practical training. That was one of the issues we were addressing.
Now, is it that people are reluctant to entertain that because of the letter of the law, or are there other reasons that make them reluctant to entertain the thought that someone would have their own kind of spinoff venture?
Yeah, I think both. I think that the regulations, it appears, aren't sufficiently clear to give comfort to the people who have to make those decisions that the self-employment, being an active founder, is allowed. And so I think the literal language is against them. And then again, you have the same theme we see with the H-1B process, that there just might be an inkling that maybe these businesses are not legitimate and they're only being created for the purpose of staying in the country. And so that's why we built into our reform some checks and balances on that, so there'd be some review of how the business is being developed and that it has legitimate potential.
Now, the other reform that you're talking about is modifying some existing legislation, the Startup Act 2.0, and its House counterpart. What has this bill accomplished, and how would you modify it?
Okay. The bill right now would create up to 75,000 special visas called qualified alien entrepreneur visas to allow people who start businesses that are properly formed under a state in the United States and have at least over the first year, they have to have at least two full-time employees. And they have to have a certain level of capital investment. So, again, the bill introduced by Senator Moran from Kansas, Senator Blunt from Missouri, Senator Warner from Delaware, and several others, so it's bipartisan legislation, is designed to show, again, that there's some legitimacy to the business. There are some standards. And then to stay for a longer period, another 3 years after that, you have to increase the business to a point where it has five full-time employees. Those employees are defined as not relatives of the alien who applied for the visa, and also they need to be U.S. citizens or permanent legal residents in the United States. It is, however, confined to either folks who are already on an H-1B visa. And by the way, you can then apply at the end of this period if the business continues like that, can apply for permanent status. Now, what troubled us in terms of what we see in entrepreneurship education at the university and at other universities is that the proposed legislation is limited in two ways that we think should be really expanded. One is it was geared toward either people who already have H-1B visas, so they're here on a work visa, or graduate students or people who have graduate degrees, not undergraduate degrees. And as my colleague John would tell you, many, many of the students we see, creative, innovative students, are undergraduates. And, in fact, many businesses of renown have been started by undergraduates. So that was one limitation we would like to expand to cover undergraduates as well as graduate students. And secondly, it was limited to if the basis for applying is that you're a grad student or a recent graduate, it was limited to STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And while those are certainly critical to technological innovation, we similarly find students all across the campus in the arts and the humanities who are creating businesses. In fact, last year, the UM System Student Entrepreneur of the Year was from the law school. Kristen Kenney won that award last year. So, it's the entrepreneurship is not, as John would say, bounded by any particular discipline, and that's a strong theme in our proposals.
Well, this whole discussion, though, takes place in a national context where, you know, the economy right now is bad and jobs are scarce. What about critics who say growing more foreign-born entrepreneurs really competes with American entrepreneurs who are trying to get things started? Is there any validity to that argument?
If you view the economy as finite and so it's a zero-sum game, so there's $100 available for investment in venture startups, and it's either going to go to an American or a foreign national, then there would be validity to that statement. That's not the case.
And we would like people to understand that when John and my colleague at the law school, Malaika Simmons, and I got together to do this, one of the major themes was to generate more jobs in the United States for anybody here legally, so that these ventures can serve as the engine for jobs for U.S. citizens, permanent legal residents, and other foreign visitors who are here on valid visas. So it's not, it's really, we think, a potential boost to the economy that just makes sense.
Now, I know in terms of our political environment, there are certainly factions in the political process who really are very conservative about any immigration reforms in the wake of terrorist activity and all the talk about, controlling our borders. What realistic barriers do you think some of these changes face given that climate? And, how would you respond to people who may be against reforming it at all?
The idea is that we want to create the best economic environment that we can, given the resources that we have available to us. So here is a case where one of the great strengths that we have here is a phenomenal post-secondary education system in this country, all over this country. We have a lot of great universities. We train a lot of people. The most important everything that characterizes a modern society, from the cotton gin on down, all these creations were brought to us by entrepreneurs. We need entrepreneurs to make our economy work, to make it grow. We train people. We teach them how to do things. We instill in them the entrepreneurial mindset if they don't already have it. And they want to act on that knowledge and that mindset. And we say to them, no, we'd rather you didn't. We'd rather you went somewhere else and grew their economy. Thank you. I think that's short-sighted. Mayor Bloomberg called it a form of, national suicide was the way he characterized it. I think it's extraordinarily short-sighted to imagine that all of the good entrepreneurial ideas are going to come from one group of people and one group of people only. I think that kind of idea will kill a company, and I think that kind of an idea will choke an economy.
Well, John Norton, Tony Lupino, thank you for being with us on KC Currents.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Norton is Associate Director for the Institute of Entrepreneurship and Innovation at UMKC's Block School of Management. Tony Lupino is a professor at UMKC's Law School.